Lord Renly took a step back, taut as a bowstring. Every moment you delay gives Cersei another moment to prepare. By the time Robert dies, it may be too late. For both of us. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in the second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinoza.
Said that almost word for word in several mailing tables. And without fail, they have always fucked it up.
Yeah. Robert never even died. Huh. Didn't go that long.
When Robert's running around at a mealy table, the game's over usually pretty quick.
Yeah. That was more first edition than second edition. I really haven't been seeing a lot of Bera in Melee lately, but I still think they've got a place.
Yeah. Well, then. Why didn't you read that quote in your best Roy Dotrice impression in honor of our deceased audiobook narrator, Will?
Oh, man, I should have. I guess I should listen to the books on audio sometime.
I've never done that. They have their charms. They definitely have their charms.
At this point, then, is there actually enough audio of him that, assuming any other books ever come out in this series, that they could just recut his audio to regale us with the next novel?
Well, most of the next novel will just be words are wind, nipples on a breastplate, and other Martinisms, right? That's how Winds is going to be, just Martinism
and
Martinism.
And a lot of food.
Yeah, I have food. So yeah, you don't need a new narrator.
Maybe he'll just slowly segue into like Redwall and see if we don't notice. And just everyone suddenly is an animal instead of like an animal.
Maybe? I've never actually read any of the Redwall stuff.
Will?
I read the first one a long time ago. Al is a big fan of Redwall, so.
It's like Thrones with less violence, no sex, but way more vivid food, wine, and cheese descriptions.
Well, I mean, that sounds like how mice want to live, right? Food is the mouse's dream.
And mine. Ugh.
Okay, so I think we've got a lot on our plate for episode 311 this week. Thanks for joining me for it, Roy and Kyle. Obviously, I'm Will. We've gotten kind of lackadaisical about introducing ourselves some weeks, so I felt like I should really make sure we do that. But we've got four different things we want to hit on this week, because this should be the episode that lands right before World. So it's going to be action-packed. So, let's see. Up first, FFG dropped some more previews on us from the Thorns box, which is kind of crazy. Is this the latest we've ever seen official previews drop since Everyone's assuming that this comes out next week.
I think so. I was really surprised that this came out after Brian's sort of article that spoiled his card, because this spoils way more cards than sort of just one. It seems like if you're going to release anything at the last minute, it would be sort of an article that just spoils one card versus something that spoils, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cards, I think, that we've not seen before.
Five? I'm just thinking 4. What am I missing?
The 2 in the cluster photo, the 2 by themselves, and the Dothraki at the bottom.
Have we seen the two.
Yeah, we've seen the Strangler and the Novus before.
Have we? Okay.
There's also Tokar, which I think is new.
Oh right, it's not even in there, right? It's just the card. Yeah, you have to click.
Yeah, like they hide it in the title there instead of giving you the full picture.
It's a card so shitty that they don't want to actually, and it also isn't what it. And also, the art doesn't actually match how a token
I know.
Works in the book. So it's just like, literally, this card is like the ultimate binder fodda card. It's just like, it's not thematic because the art doesn't match. And the art can't match. Like, it's just, you're not going to just have a boob just hanging
out not?
In the card art. And then, it's a terrible, terrible card. So...
Yeah, maybe we should just start there, then.
Do you want me to
read
it? I really hate this card. So it's a Targaryen attachment, 1 cost, non-unique, non-loyal. It's an item, so hey, at least it's not a condition. It's a Targ character only. Attached character gets +1 strength through each attachment it has. While attached characters participating in a challenge, each character without attachments cannot gain power.
Ooh.
Ugh.
That's some serious soft control right there. Watch out.
3x every Targ deck.
I think there'll be some cool, janky, hey, Rusted Maesters, Targ had stupid Maesters build in first ed. This is the core component of an equally stupid Targ Maesters build here in second ed. That is the only thing this will go in. I will lose to it in like round 4 of a tournament, and it will make me very mad.
I don't even, you know what, you're giving this card way too much credit, Kyle. It maybe has some applicability in Melee, where Renown is even more sort of priceless than it is in Joust, but still, the character has to be in the challenge. So, like, you can,
yeah.
And it's not like this has ambush.
No, that part doesn't matter. It's like, just the +1 strength for each attachment. They will have a
that's
dude
true.
With stupid... 5 attachments on it, and you'll just Voltron up something dumb.
Yeah, I can see that, maybe.
Yeah, I'm with Roy, but I think even a little more down on this, I don't even think it's going to be playable in Melee. It seems fairly bad as far as... second edition attachments go. Maybe Kyle's fear will come to pass, but what we've seen of the Maester stuff so far in second edition, I feel like they're going to skew a little differently than they did in first. So I'm pretty down on Tokar.
I mean, it's got to be filling in for the fact that Targ also got a Donkey Donk card, like an amazing card, is its other one in this box, which is Quotho, who's a 5 cost, non-loyal, unique character with a military and intrigue icon, 5 strength, Blood Rider, Dothraki, action, discard 2 Targaryen cards from your hand to put Quotho into play from your hand. Ridiculously good. Super good card.
2 cards is a lot, though. I mean, in exchange for 5 gold, I like the flexibility. But
as an any phase action, though, like that's, I think, the real strength. It's not a challenges action. It's sort of any time you might need board presence for any reason, you can put them in. And Targ has so much like synergy with having not very many cards in your hand and getting things into the discard pile for Flea Bottom. And it's just, I don't know.
The tricky part might be just having that many cards spare in hand. Mm-hmm. you know, they've already got amazing discard tech in Plaza and other things that kind of key off of them having less cards that, you know, I may be down to the last three cards in my hand. And at that point, ditching Quotho could be, or sorry, ditching to get Quotho into play could start looking kind of dicey.
I'm not saying it's not super good. Just it gave me pause for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you can just pay 5 gold for 5 strength on 2 good icons.
Right, right. And, you know, increasingly relevant traits. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think he looks good. Also, he's not loyal. I mean, he pseudo is with that ability, but it's worth pointing out just in case.
Yeah, you could have some sort of false banner deck that is more Targ than anything else, which I don't know if that entirely works, but it could work.
Maybe, gosh, I don't know. I would really need to look at that pool again. I don't know what you would do. You're
hey,
sure
it's
not
another
earning,
reason
I'll tell you that.
Oh, sorry, Will. But this is another reason to have Freedmen in your deck. You can chuck Freedmen in there and then get them out with your... by winning a challenge by 5 or more, which you can do with Quotho because he's 5 strength. Synergy.
Mm-hmm. There you go. That's what it's all about.
He's also really good in Targ Reigns. Like, really good.
Oh, yeah, with that intrigue icon?
At 5 strength.
Yep. Okay. So, let's see. We also picked up a couple Martell cards. I'll throw one of those out there because I know Kyle doesn't have these open.
Yeah, I do.
Really?
Yeah, take that.
Well then, why don't you read The Bastard of God's Grace? We'll just keep working backwards up the article.
All right. 5 cards is a unique, non-loyal, 5 cost, 4 strength, military intrigue, Bastard and a Knight, Renown, and challenges action, discard a power from him to reduce the cost of the next card you play or ambush by 2. Now that I like. That I like a lot.
Yep. He's real good.
I mean, now you're playing Vengeance on 0 gold. I like the sound of that a lot.
And he makes those expensive ambush characters much more affordable. Yeah. He's real good. And he's just a good character on his own, right? And he gives the renown that Martell wants to close games.
Even if he didn't have that challenges action, I would be strongly looking at playing him. Like, he's just kind of that solid mid-range body for Tyrell that I think... You know, we kind of made some of this sort of argument with some of the bestow stuff before about them just being good bodies without the abilities. But let's be honest, the Bastard's body is better than those, I think, right? Solid icons and that renown plus being a knight.
And I like this because it's kind of like the opposite of our Dothraki friend where... It's like the flexibility is nice for choosing 2 not so nice things, having either pay 5 gold or ditch 2 cards. Whereas here, you know, you either keep that renown power or you get to use it for econ. But it's not like either way, it's like a win-win for you. Like things stack up positively rather than like you getting some flexibility on whichever is the lesser of 2 evils in a moment, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes complete sense. I think the 5 slot characters so far that they've revealed in this box are really solid for both factions. But Bastard of God's Grace is probably a better card overall, particularly because he doesn't have that faction synergy. And as a non-loyal character, you could slap him in Lanny's son or Bera son. Lanny's son is, you know, because Lannister has all that native ambush. That's really pretty strong.
Yeah. Oh, it's. I mean, there's just a lot of options.
Yeah. Very good flexible card. It adds to your threat of activation because, I mean, the moment you win a challenge with him, now they constantly are worried because all of your events are turned on. I mean, just that threat of activation is so... cannot be overstated how powerful that is.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, they have a very hard time accurately predicting what you can play at all once you've got at least one power on him.
I mean, until you get to top cut, and then it'll just look at your deck list and know. But besides that moment, it'll be...
That's fair.
Well, they won't know if it's in your hand at that specific moment, Kai.
Well, that's good. Stupid.
Well, I think that's on the list of topics, right? Well,
No, I thought we talked about that.
Talk about that last week. Did you talk about that last week? See, this is the movie magic getting revealed here. I haven't heard the white book yet. So
it gets so confusing sometimes.
It does, particularly when you do two podcasts and you forget what you said on which one.
Start loading up the camera for this one, and it's gonna be weird.
All right, so I think that sends us on to our last one. Yeah, go for it.
Also,
Martell card.
Also, suck at Will for doubting that I had this article open.
Yeah, you didn't do yourself many favors though when I told you to actually read it, and you were like, and then.
So I had the article open. It was just at the top. I hadn't actually clicked the tab yet. Where in here is this shit? All right, here we go. Hellholt, a unique non-loyal location. Not a lot of loyalty in here. I guess that's part of the theme. Theoretically, you can use these with Tyrell if you really wanted. Two cost, Dorne, House Uller, Stronghold, and reaction, after you lose a challenge by 5 or more strength, Hellholt gains 1 power. And I like that a lot. That's a really good passive power grab card.
This card is so stupid. Like, why does it not have a limit? Why does Martell need more passive power gain? Like, this and the Bone Way is...
it's fast.
I'm excited about that.
It's real fast.
Yeah, that's like a that this speeds up Martell's stall like really fast. Like it makes it woo. Very sharp.
I mean, at least that means that those games, as you said, are faster. You know, I don't know. It feels to me like. They keep pushing second edition as far as power grab goes to be much, much faster and more kind of diverse than it was in first edition, which early in the game, I think kind of offset a slower pacing brought on by the gold curve and the resource system. But now that that's kind of smoothing out, I think the game is going to really accelerate. I mean, unless your opponent is just cycling Vanguard Lancer about 30 times a game. But, you know, that's something else.
Yeah, very strong card. Martell Stahl gets it. It'll be interesting to see what happens to it since it's non-loyal. Like, Boneway is loyal, if I remember right. But, like, what this does to Banner Stahl as a stall. Banner Stahl. Banner Sun as a stall package on its own instead of Martell being the main faction and then importing usually Bera, but sometimes Night's Watch as a stall mechanism. So it'd be interesting to say like what a Night's Watch Sun with this is or something like that. So
then, or even just kind of stereotypical like melee banner package. I mean, the go-to banner packages in Melee, I think, have been Rose and Kraken for quite a while, right? You know, I could see these pushing Sun to be of interest.
I don't know if it's that fast or good, but maybe.
I don't know if it's, yeah, I don't know if it's that fast.
Well, not by itself, but you also get access to things like the Bastard, who, you know, is non-loyal renown that that Martell didn't really have before, so I don't know.
That's true.
Let's build it and see.
These are good cards spoiled here, except for that one that shall not be spoken of. Because we've already seen the other two cards in the article, right? You said, Will, the Novice and
the
Strangler?
The ones in the fan. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also don't know why the Strangler looks like a D20.
Yeah, I don't know either, but...
What are you talking about? That is totally a D10.
Or D12?
Either way, it looks like a guy.
Still, it's maybe real big. They'd be like, oh, I didn't notice this big thing come out of my hairnet.
Strangler's real good, though. Like, real good.
That's very interesting. Okay, well, we're not here to review the entire box. That's probably fun stuff we'll get to start into post-Worlds. Really awkward when it comes out versus when Worlds is, and that's going to really muck
the
time.
Same as the Lanny box last year.
Yeah. But, oh well, what are you going to do?
Have a better release schedule.
Yeah, I mean, other prestigious tournaments could make the box legal, though, you know, and see what the diverse meta will be like.
We'll see, but I would want it to be legit. So we'll see. I'm still contemplating. We'll see. We'll see. We still don't have an official, hey, it's shown up yet. Like, we just think it's coming.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
So let's see if it actually gets into a store nearby soon.
Okay, well, let's see. What else? Speaking of these premier-level tournaments, I think we've got some other news on that front, right? Big news that I kind of helped out with, and these guys just kind of unfortunately had to witness when it was all unveiled. We've got a player-led initiative on a update to Second Edition Melee. We've introduced a restricted list and a few tweaks to some of the rules, essentially just at 3-player tables, in the hopes that we can kind of shape the Melee game into a better spot, since it is not something that FFG wants to focus on. Of course, that means any official side tournaments at FFG events like Melee at Worlds, not Melee Worlds, you know, probably will not use this, but other tournaments like the largest Thrones event in the world, Stalik, will be using it. So I'm hoping that it catches on well with the community. So, all right, you guys are the ones having to sit and listen through to this. Do I read the whole restricted list after, or do I just point people
where to find it?
To find it.
Dear God.
Indeed.
Okay. That's fair. You can find it currently on the front page of Card Game DB, though it will probably be pushed down a little bit by the time that it's actually that you are listening to this episode. There we go. That delay is still throwing me off. It's also been linked in the Card Game DB forums. It's also linked on the White Book Podcast website. That's where it was posted first. So that was just whitebookpodcast.com/, I believe it was melee-rules-update. But it should still be fairly easy to find in the news or articles section there. And so we restricted several cards with the goal of reining in some factions that were a little above the curve, as well as curbing attempts to win games without actually making or defending challenges of your own, while still leaving some specific different play styles for different factions, letting them have their own identities. One thing a lot of folks looking at the list have really kind of hit on have been things like, we did restrict Relentless Assault, but left Elena's machinations and her informant both untouched. And that was not an oversight. That was a feature that we discussed and debated in an attempt to leave a particular rushy aggro identity available to Tyrell, but leaving those extra challenge options as being way more resource intensive than Relentless Assault is. Similar things were brought up, like with Rise of the Kraken and Greyjoy, which we debated heavily and came down in the end on the side. Most folks, of course, this was a large group effort with discussion and voting and such, so not everyone agreed with every single card. But a lot of discussion went into things like Rise of the Kraken and leaving it open for an unopposed theme for Greyjoy that centered more around a key turn and that sort of thing. So here it is. It's a lot of cards. It's probably a few more than I would have personally done, but overall, I'm relatively happy with the compromises that we made, and I'm eager to see how it plays out in a bigger field as well. We tweaked three player tables. Some folks here in our meta really doubled down on testing some games and really said Crown Regent too often turns into a real negative play experience in in three player matches. Which, if you pull that, then kind of up some odds that you're having some issues with the supports, which already kind of have oddities that can happen that turns the game more into multiple joust games than a melee. So we've done away with supports as well. You still rival people, but supporting does not exist. So I feel good about it. I feel good. We'll see how it goes. Kyle, are we doing this in Ireland? Do you feel up to snuff?
So I'm going to send that link out to people and try to get the news out. Check this out. We'll give it a whirl. Friday night, melee.
I really kind of rambled on there pretty hard. I should have let you guys offer any other thoughts or input a little harder. Did you guys have anything you wanted to hit on? You know, feel free to tell me that the whole thing is wrong, except for any cards that I personally really wanted on there.
Like you said, I mean, I think it's a touch heavy-handed for being a first rendition of, but I mean, I think it's a decent enough place to start. You can understand why most of the cards are on there, and we'll play and see how badly it's broken.
Yeah, a lot of this makes sense. I think particularly the neutral cards all make sense. It's interesting to see Flea Bottom kind of in some ways soft banned from the format, but I feel like that may end up being the fate of Flea Bottom in general if we ever get around to a restricted list in Joust. So I'm a little bit more skeptical of some of the other cards, and you can argue like why Randall isn't on here but Eddard is, and all kinds of other things. But I think overall it's a pretty good restricted list. I'm glad to see that it broke up Wonder Woman in melee, which I think is where the deck actually really shines much more than in Joust. Very, very powerful deck in melee. I don't understand why you guys put Catelyn on there, but sure. I agree with Kyle, basically. This is very heavy-handed. I can sense I can sense Wama all over this this restricted list, but it is I think it's mostly necessary. It's good to see Heads on Spikes, Superior Claim separated, Clash of Kings separated. Like it all makes particularly the neutral cards and the plots all make a lot of sense, but it may be a little too heavy-handed for sort of the first experiment with a restricted list in second edition.
Good job, guys.
That's fair.
Good job.
B minus.
Okay. You know what? I'll take it. Okay, so to follow up with that, we've got part two to last week's episode, which spent a little time deck doctoring on a Tyrell Reigns deck that I've been tinkering with. I wanted to experiment more with the Minstrel and Songs because I really dig that kind of engine. So RJ and Kyle kind of helped me work through some different considerations and such, and then I took it to a little local tournament over the weekend where we wound up having four games. We didn't have a ton of people. It was round robin. I lost one game to the guy that went undefeated and won it. And you know, overall, I think I had a pretty good time with the deck. I liked the feel. A couple of the smaller changes we made, I think, smooth things out. One change, I definitely think I would go ahead and look elsewhere with in the end. But I'll get to that. So the game I wound up losing to actually was to Greyjoy Reigns, which went undefeated, as I said, and it actually, I was worried we were going to wind up fighting over that intrigue aspect a little too hard, but he really didn't have much in that way. He wound up landing Euron and the Reader on turns like 4 and 5, and what really caused me the most issue were duplicates. Had very early, had a lot of saves on the board. King Balin with a save, Asha with, if I remember right, 2 dupes, and then he had another Iron Mine on the board at one point. So I just couldn't get into a place to really effectively use any of my board wipes, where even with my Marjorie on board, that I wasn't going to come out of it worse than him, which I think was probably my biggest issue there. Made a game out of it, but couldn't really close things out. Wound up Valoring in the hopes that he'd have a bad draw, and I could turn it there, because I did manage to eventually chew through the dupes on Balin and get rid of the 3 or 4 power he had. But he drew well. He drew well. If I remember right, that was the turn he drew and then played the Reader. So that really helped him out. Aside from that, faced Lanny, Lords of the Crossing, Stark Direwolves, and a Bera deck. And honestly, made pretty quick work of all of those. I felt good. I just didn't dig Elena's machinations. That's probably the one thing we tweaked and talked about last week that I was strictly unhappy with. Anytime I saw it, I just said, "Nope, I can't spare the gold to sit here and do this," or something along those lines. And it just didn't have a home. So that probably needs to turn
that's
into
not
something.
A song.
It is not, and it did replace a couple songs, but there's only so many songs to choose from, and I think you made some valid arguments last week that Dornishman's Wife is maybe not the right song for this deck. So I don't know. I know there were some of the other cards you mentioned earlier. You wanted to kind of ask about that. You said you'd kind of been that you,
you
wanted me to keep my eyes peeled, on. You know, not really. I kept blinking. I couldn't keep him alive nearly long enough.
Yeah. How often did you trigger Highgarden and Minstrel?
You know, the Minstrel, in this version of the deck, probably about 4 times. I definitely have less songs than I did in the initial draft. So, the deck has, I think, fairly obviously drifted away from the all the songs focus that I wanted to gleefully tinker with at first.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, at that point, I think just if I pull that, it really just sends it into becoming kind of the standard good stuff Tyrell Reigns, right?
And sometimes there's nothing wrong with that. As someone who plays almost exclusively good stuff decks.
Yeah, the standard good stuff, I found this list on the internet decks.
A very boilerplate.
I don't know what that means. That must be some Philly slang I'm unfamiliar with. Excuse me while I Google boilerplate.
I like sound of Kyle's Googling.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's actually typing. We can tell.
Well, it tells me he's rolled steel for making boilers. That's not helpful. They standardize non-specific parts of a contract, the fine print that gets tacked on by lawyers to protect themselves and their clients.
Yes. All right. What? How did Hornhill perform? Well,
you know,
I'd like to see more of, like, it got the hype, but I've been kind of skeptical a little bit of it. And so, how did it do for you?
You know, Hornhill is one in my initial draft. The first weekend, I kind of threw this deck together and played it. I got Hornhill out a couple times and wound up putting, I think, actually just one gold on it, actually. But I did really enjoy it. But this past weekend at the tournament, I literally did not draw Hornhill. So I cannot speak to its veracity. I still feel okay about having it as a 1X. But I did not have any games where I could say it under or overperformed or performed at all.
Let's see. Are there any interesting cards here that I'd ask questions about? No, I mean, otherwise, I mean, it does look a little bit like a good stuff Reigns deck that has some songs.
yeah.
A Rose of Gold. How did that do, actually? I'm always interested to see how that does in decks that aren't Hyper Viper. Did you find it useful?
That is one that I like if I have a Minstrel, and I really care less for if I don't, mainly because it's not too bad to be sitting on one gold to go into challenges, and then dig for a Nightmares or a Tears of Lis and get back the gold that I need then to spend on that. Or it can be okay, passable to okay if I've got a Paxter Redwin around to operate somewhat similarly. But I don't know. I wish it wasn't a challenge phase only action. If I could do that in other phases, I would love it. Yes. Basically marshalling.
That'd be useful, wouldn't it? Wow. So close, yet so far.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that's, I mean, the its spiritual predecessor, I mean, that was half the fun, right? Was to ditch a card for plot shenanigans or to be able to manipulate your hand size or dig at key moments when needed. I think the flexibility was half the strength, and this one I think pigeonholing hurts it more than you maybe notice in a playtesting environment.
Yeah, I think it's a card that maybe is just kind of at the bottom of that fence, and you know, maybe what I'm discovering, as neat as the song stuff can be, kind of as a fiddly little machine to tinker with, their level just isn't quite there, which is why kind of as we went through some of the revisioning process, it became less of a song deck. So I don't know, I kind of feel like Tyrell needs one more good song to throw in here, like a real solid one that would probably by association pull a Rose of Gold up, because it would, you know, make Minstrel and all that thing more appealing. But right now,
I don't know if the songs are the issue at this point. I think you need more things that would key off of them. Whether that's some kind of bomb character that would get something huge, or just another non-unique, or I think a location, something that's static and sticks on the board that can interact with all of the songs you play. I think that is the piece that is missing. Like, I don't even know if it's, I don't think it's song quality or quantity even. You just need a reason to do it. And right now, I think your reasons to do it are less strong than other routes you can go.
I could agree with that. Especially the last segment there. There's just less strong.
But it's good to explore. And I think you gave it, you know, the old crack at the bat. But this was not the time.
Oh, well. Still, it was good to get out there and fiddle with some things, tinker with some stuff in the meta, kind of see what happens.
Anything
what other
noteworthy about your other games?
So, maybe.
Was the Direwolf deck just straight Stark aggro? Was it weird?
I don't know that it was weird. I mean, it was heavy, heavy on the intimidate from is it the Wolves of the North?
I think it's Wolves of the North.
Yeah, and I actually was a bit worried on, I think it was turn two. You know, he landed Bran and had the wolves and such coming at me, but then in turn three, I used First Snow of Winter to force his Bran back into his hand, so I knew he was only going to be able to use the wolves once. And I also wound up winning initiative that turn. And I'm trying to remember exactly what it was that I did. It was a military challenge of some reason. And he didn't wind up defending with the wolves. He wanted to use them to attack against me, which wound up letting me win it. Trying to remember, I think it might have just been that he only had the two characters left, and then that left him just down to the wolves.
I apologize. It's actually Roaming Wolf Pack is the
card. Roaming Wolf Pack. There
it's
we
the
go.
6/6 military icon with intimidate. I think it's +2. It gives +2 strength to each attacking direwolf character. So,
yeah, which is pretty strong when he's throwing, you know, 2 8 strength intimidate attacks at you. He had a lot of high initiative. He was even playing Storm of Swords for some extra military challenges. He put a lot of pressure in early, but then basically without Brienne around for a turn, he kind of lost a piece of his game plan, and it kind of threw him off, and that kind of spiraled that turn, and then from there on out, I was able to keep actually being able to have characters to make challenges, so it swung back my way. That was probably the other most notable thing that wound up happening in the other games. The Lannister one was fairly straightforward with us kind of slugging it out back and forth, but he kind of overextended with his uniques early and left himself vulnerable to a Valor, and then just didn't have, you know, the resources he needed to land things again.
Yeah, a bunch of afterward. Expensive wolves with no saves is a tough sell.
Yeah, that too. So yeah.
So one sort of final question. I can't remember if you mentioned this earlier though. Rebuilding. How did that end up working?
You know, rebuilding, I think, is another piece that was kind of an archive from the very initial build of the deck, which even was a little different than the one I brought on the show. They just went all out on the songs and trying to play and replay and keep cycling them back into the deck and digging. I have to say, I never felt all that bad about having rebuilding. Good initiative and good gold. And it's not something I was opening with, so I was not afraid that I was going to be hit with a naval superiority. Rebuilding's a turn 3 or 4 play. So in general, I felt pretty good about it, based mainly on the stats. The hope was to originally, you know, do something like shuffle Nightmares Baron the Maiden Fairs back into the deck, and then just keep, you know, filtering down into what I want and keep controlling stuff, that sort of thing. I did wind up using it, I guess, if I remember correctly, a turn too early against the Greyjoy player, and I tentatively should have held it for another turn so that I could have shuffled my own King's Road back into the deck so that he could not steal it with Euron, which would have been a nice way to slow him down. That might have let me swing things, but that's dicey. It's still, it would have been a better play. So I guess those are my general thoughts on rebuilding. It feels kind of specific for a certain game plan, but even as I've shifted away from that, I've not really regretted it. It's maybe not the max power level, but I've appreciated it more than you'd think. Well, I wound up rambling on and on about that for more than I expected. How about we get to the real meat and potatoes that listeners want to hear a little bit about, and that is Worlds.
Womp, womp.
We're getting ready. Yeah, we're getting ready for a big weekend in Game of Thrones. Little under or over a week from when this episode goes up, depending on whether you are at Worlds or IO Worlds. And I think, you know, I think a lot of folks probably already have some plans in mind for what they're doing, but who knows? Maybe we'll have some last minute discussion that will cause somebody to rebuild their deck the night of the tournament and then go on to crush everything.
Yeah, there's also, you know, a funner event that weekend that's more fun and better. Let's not forget.
Well, there's Minnesota Worlds and Iowa Worlds, so they're, you know, they're like
the yeah. Who'd have thought that at any point in time, Iowa and Minnesota would hold 90% of the competitive players in America?
Yeah,
key crazy. Locations all around, easily accessible, lovely weather this time of year. Yeah, well.
Well, you know, it'll be even later in the year.
Well, so, with global weirding, it'll probably be 67 degrees and sunny. So I'm not so much worried about the weather.
Okay, so if we're looking at getting ready for these prestigious tournaments and events, assuming that we're looking at the Joust events, because who knows what might happen in Melee now, thanks to this restricted list. But in Joust, what are we looking at? I went ahead and pulled up the annals of Castle Black for competitive tournaments since the last pack was released, which, you know, anybody can do, but I think it's worth kind of taking a look at the, you know, top two things probably that I pull out of looking at this is, well, make that top three things. Tyrell and Greyjoy are both looking real strong for winners. And that was actually what I was probably going to give my nod to even before I looked at this. But as I scrolled down here and looked at some other stuff, the other one that kind of snuck up on me is the really high qualification rate here on Dragon, Banner of the Dragon agenda. So that makes me think, you know, maybe there's some other little different build. I was really figuring odds went toward Reigns, but maybe somebody's going to surprise me with something.
Yeah, I think we're going to see Stall. I think this is going to, again, be the meta of Stall and with people bringing answers to it. But the question, you know, the open question that we have is how many Americans are going to be willing to bring Greyjoy to a major tournament? Because even though Worlds is the world championship, it's still, what, 60% of the attendees are from North America, would you say, Will?
Oh, 60% from North America?
80 or 90?
I think the number's probably higher than that.
Right. All right. I'm going to go with...
Yeah. I
Let's
bet
compromise
you...
Let's say 75%. Is that
78.
That will be... All right. And so that means 78. There we go. That was a good year. we can... The open question is, will a critical mass of good players in North America bring Greyjoy? If not, and you take sort of the bet that Alex Black and his team of Canadians and Pacific Northwesters did, and some of the Midwest guys did, then you can bring Stahl either in its Barra form or its Night's Watch form or its Martell form and just run away with it, because the standard answers are going to have problems unless you have players like of Kyle's caliber playing Lanny Reigns. You're going to be able to run over Lannister with that deck. You're going to be able to run over a lot of Targaryen decks. You're going to be able to run over a lot of non-stall Night's Watch decks. You're going to be able to run over a lot of Tyrell. Stark can't do anything. Maybe Frozen Solid can help you, but it's still, you know... But if enough Americans say, hey, Greyjoy is the way to
go. I thought they were going to be all over at Gen Con. I was very surprised at how little Greyjoy there was.
Yep. that was our bet too. We thought that Greyjoy would keep the super stall in check, and we would prey on Greyjoy, which is why we brought the Night's Watch Reigns deck that we brought and prey on Lannister and on Greyjoy. That worked out for us, except like my only loss in the Swiss was to a stall deck, right? But I beat the other matchups that we brought the deck for. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see a similar meta to Gen Con from the North Americans, which is high on stall with some Greyjoy floating around in the middle to lower tiers.
So yeah, I think you will see now that stall and the Night's Watch craze has manifested itself. I mean, it's one thing, I think it's tough to bring a Predator deck like the Greyjoy stuff banking on a certain meta. But now that you've seen it, and let's be honest, like the meta has not changed that much between then and now to believe that it's not going to show up in mass again.
I mean,
like, I think those players who focus on that deck,
I mean, we did,
but I'm saying like those stall decks aren't irrelevant now. They are just as powerful and strong as they were then, maybe more so. So I think it's very easy. So
I agree, Kyle, more so. I'd say.
Yes.
Like stalls even more.
Oh yeah,
so
those two
cards.
You'll
definitely see Greyjoy players coming out trying to say, "I'm just going to ride, walk up Night's Watch and Martell to a top cut," and they very well could. That I fully expect to hear that story come out when we'll interview someone like, "So how did you get there?" And he's like, "Well, and then I played this stall deck, and then this stall deck, and this stall deck." I mean, with the percentage of the field it was at Gen Con, I'm sure that story's out there. Is that is what you played against all day. It's like, I mean, we had those tournaments. There were Gen Cons and World Tournaments in First Set, I remember, where I played against Lannister like 6 of my 7 rounds. And it's like, that's the hotness. Everyone knows it. That's what shows up. Because you want to win.
Yeah. I remember doing something fairly similar with Greyjoy in particular, where I hit this string of 4 or 5 Greyjoy players all in a row in kind of the middle rounds of Swiss, you know, and they were kind of planning on knocking out, you know, and kind of being that Predator deck, like you were saying. And this year, actually, I played that year in question, that is, I played Zyler and Daryl back-to-back, who were planning on doing that. But it turned out, like, my deck kind of ate those Greyjoy decks for lunch, and, like, if any of them had made the top 16, I think they would have crushed. But they hit a bad string right in the middle. Alrighty. Well, you know, there's a certain type of deck that I always felt in first edition, it was my kind of deck, and I felt it was kind of this steady mainstay. Its performance never really went too far up or down for years. And it was played well and smart. It could still get you into top 16. What deck was that? That deck was Neil. But in second edition, I don't really know that we're going to see that at Worlds this year. I don't feel that that Baratheon is really going to see a resurgence. What do you guys think?
Bear is in a rough spot, I think, one for your Freudian slip there, Targaryen, that Plaza of Pride makes kneeling people's big guys a lot less appealing, particularly because Targ Fealty, because it got so many good cards in the third cycle, just will always be a presence in the meta. You'll always probably play at least one Targ deck on the day, if not more, and that just can really destroy a Bear player's sort of strength of schedule and knock them out of the winner's bracket into the loser's bracket. And then the other problem is Bera is really good at one and a half things. It's really good at winning dominance, whether through Neil and other things, and it's really good at soft control. But the problem is the stall decks, the Martell Stag, the Night's Watch Stag, sort of other variants of Night's Watch, there's Stally, Martell Watch, things like that, they are just better at the two things that Bera does. not necessarily the Neo, but the soft control through things like Mutiny and Kraven and Milks. Like these, and then these decks are just as good at Dom, if not better, with, again, cards like Mutiny in the Night's Watch matchup that just make a lot of Bera's big expensive characters cry. Like Bera's Econ, it gets shut down if you suddenly start losing dominance. Like, Bera's in a rough place. It can still roll people. It's still frustrating. It still keeps a few decks honest, particularly some versions of Night's Watch, some versions of Lannister, some versions of Greyjoy. But it's really, really weak because of just sort of where the meta shifted. And the fact that it can't abuse Flea Bottom in a Flea Bottom meta is also another big problem for Bera.
Yeah, they just haven't had any real meaty cards come along in a while that I think tips them back into relevancy. I think when it does show up, it will be... I mean, Neil's one of those things that's kind of like Burn as a mechanic where it kind of floats in this middle of the pack to okay, like it's never going to do terribly, but like you said, it's in the not the best of places, and then it seems that something just sparks it and it is brutal and extremely difficult to deal with. And I fully expect at some point that Bera will wake up in a angry way. But now is not that time.
Okay. So here's kind of a different way than maybe to look at going into Worlds and not divulging our decks. I know folks have given podcasts in general kind of a bad name off and on, where they feel sometimes things were misled a little bit. So I don't want to push too hard for or against a certain deck that you guys want to take. But as a different perspective on things, what about what would you tech against? I know Roy is going. Kyle and I guess it has to be more of an if we were, or at least maybe what would we tech against going into Isle Worlds? I legitimately, at this point, have to say, I don't know that IO Worlds and Worlds will really have the same meta, knowing there's a sizable contingent of people coming from Worlds over to IO Worlds. I don't know how many of them just play the same deck versus how many play something a little more offbeat. So I think Kyle and I's experience might be skewed a little bit.
Well, we also have a way higher quotient of world, continental, and regional champions to the pool.
That's true.
There's 30 plus, at this point, 30 plus people come into IO Worlds, and I think at least 10 to 15 of them have won at least a regional, if not continentals or worlds. I know Schoenthal's won. We have two other world champs coming. And I find that those are the people that tend to jump out of the mainstay, and just being in the Midwest, and Iowa in particular, our meta has a very bitter taste about the cliche. So I think you will see a handful of stall decks, but I don't think what will be prevalent at Worlds is what you're going to see down here. But if I was going to Worlds and had a tech, it would, I mean, you have to account for the stall decks and have legitimate solid answers for it, and then its solid counterpoint, which is Greyjoy. So you have to have a Valor answer, and then you have to have some way to control or interfere with these stall decks, which means some form of event cancel and location control being the big ones.
Roy, how about yourself?
I don't disagree with a lot of what Kyle said there. I think let's take things to the next level. You should target Targaryen if you're going to Worlds, because I think Targaryen is very powerful. I think it's more popular in the United States than Greyjoy, and I think people are going to think that Targ offers two things. It offers an answer to people who do bring Greyjoy to target stall, and if you build Targ the right way, you can target some of those stall decks, or at least improve your stall matchup. And I think this is basically like the Sandy Barnabas attitude towards the current meta, which is that you will have a plus matchup against things like Lannister, things like Greyjoy that are trying to maybe prey on some of these stall decks. And then with decent enough play and understanding your deck, you can and teching it, you can make your stall matchup good, okay to good, and be in a really strong place to put yourself into day two or into the top 16. So what I really think you should do is think about that we're going to see way more. I think we're going to see more Targ than we're going to see than people expect right now, and that's the deck to target. And that may bring maybe Tyrell, and I'll give a sleeper. I also think a sleeper is Stark. I think Stark is constantly almost there, and some of the itchy bitchy bits in the meta, the rise of Greyjoy, the continuing prevalence of Targ, may, and the no fun attitude that Stark has that gives it some advantages in the stall matchup could also make Stark a sleeper. I don't think you should tech against Stark. I don't think you should be like, oh, I'm going to prey on Stark like you could do last year for Worlds, and a lot of people took wins off Stark players. You can't do that, I think, for this year's Worlds. But I would think target Lannister and don't expect to see Stark to be overrepresented compared to where it is right now in the cut or in the top 32.
I will say something I like about second Ed is the making it eight houses instead of six makes playing the rock, paper, scissors matchup game way more difficult than it previously was. That aspect of the meta, I feel, seems much more healthy than where we were 5 years ago. As we sit here and talk about that, I just think to myself, yeah, like Roy rattles off four houses and different things to look at, and there are more angles that you have to consider when jumping into this than previously.
I definitely agree, but I definitely think this is something I learned in the regional season, though. I think you should really think about when building your deck and what you bring is what you want to take wins off of in the Swiss, and then what you want to have to play your butt off to succeed in. And that's where I think, again, my two suggestions of looking at Targ and looking at Stark are sort of there. Because I think people don't always take into consideration what it means, like where you're going to get your wins. They kind of just look at good decks versus sort of like, what do you see the meta going to be, and what is this good deck that you're going to bring? What is it going to target? Like, what do you want to see and what do you want to beat? And that's something definitely people, I think, should think about before going to a tournament like either of the Worlds, the Minnesota Worlds or the Iowa Worlds. And it's like I definitely learned over the regional season because I had a lot of success when I looked at the meta and been like, I want something that can target Targ and Rush. And so I played Builders, and it did pretty well for me. So
cool. Well, Worlds is going to be exciting this year. And I'm very, very interested to see what happens. I'm, of course, a little bummed I won't be up there myself, so I hope to see as many people as I can a little later in the weekend. And I want to go ahead and pre-congratulate whoever manages to take that down. I mean, it's do we have exact numbers on how many people are going? It's still going to be a very large event this year, I'm under the impression, even with the less than optimal scheduling for us.
I think we'll probably, well, we have 2 days, so I would probably somewhere just shy of 200 is where I would expect us to be. I think that sounds about right. That's about where we were last year, right?
Okay. I feel pretty good about that, really. Yeah. All right.
I mean, the prize support's sweet. Like, they did much better this year, I think, with the prize support.
Ah, you stole my prop.
I'm not overly...
I was going to prop that.
Sorry.
Keep going.
I wasn't trying to steal your prop. But I think that the Valor, sort of the center to right side of that Valor Margulis alt art card is really good. I think that the double-sided faction cards, or not faction cards, the gender cards are really good. The best of faction wood cards are really cool. The playmat's well done. The top 16 sort of thing is real, that like
do not compliment the metal. The metal is dumb.
I like the metal.
No, you don't.
And the token box. The thing I think is the only thing I think is legit bad is the art print. Like, who wants an art print? Like, no.
And I thought the trophy was a step in the wrong direction. I feel like I thought Gen Con's trophies were a step up from the crystal eggs we were used to. And then this one, I'm just not as impressed with. Unless it's really big and just doesn't scale well in the photo.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's better than Joe's trophy last year, though, which looked like a glorified regional trophy. So
yeah.
But price support is very solid. I think it's a good sign. I'm very happy to be competing for some of these prizes. So.
And you get to double dip. You get to come down here and we got some fish on.
Oh, I know. I'm excited for yours as well. Which that was definitely prop and slob territory. So.
Well, maybe we should just go ahead and move to props and slops.
Whee! I would like to slop whatever a boilerplate is. I still don't understand this reference.
My point was your deck was cookie cutter, Kyle. That's what I was trying to say.
Damn. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was.
Well played. Like, you played that like a beast. But
I just don't see why more people don't do that. It's like, hey, Treachery is arguably the best card in the game. Let's run three of it. Hey, Hand's Judgment's really solid. If you cancel the things they need, let's run three of it.
I think, and this is something probably we transitioned to Prop and Slot, but are really talking about in our last subject. I think the problem is that Lannister faces the meta right now, at least in North America, is most Lannister players don't realize that Lannister cards can't carry you to free wins anymore. And that you have to play Lannister well. And you showed that if you play Lannister well and one of your dear friends doesn't get kicked out of the tournament, that you're going to play really well. Or you're going to do really well, excuse me, if you play Lannister really well, because the cards are still really good. But also the showing of Lannister in other tournaments are going to be you can't just expect to bring a good Lannister deck and just sleep your way to the top 16 like you kind of could.
That's Kyle's game plan.
This time last year.
That's always Kyle's game plan.
No, Kyle just plays the best deck in the meta. He played Stark Dark Wings, the best deck ever made.
Oh yes,
in any card game.
And then
he plays Lanny Reigns, the best a pure efficiency Lanny Reigns, the best deck.
It has been at least 7 years since I've played what I did not think was the best deck in the meta. That's how I roll.
There you go.
So yeah, props to me for that. Cold blood.
Oh, ouch.
I will prop my dog Mira, who did really well today in her behavior training.
Nice.
Roy, I just want you to know that is the most domesticated I have ever heard you sound, and that says a lot.
Yeah, I know. Because I'm a naturally domestic person. I'm an indoor cat, so.
Though, is this something like, I just feel like you're wearing a polo and khaki shorts right now. And
I'm actually wearing the t-shirt that we give out at my school. So,
well,
I don't know if that's domestic or not.
And just that? Just the t-shirt?
Just that. Well, Kyle, I'm talking to you, so of course I'm not wearing pants. So.
I'll prop that.
Oh, I'll prop it too.
I'm gonna go ahead.
I was gonna prop. We got five more signees for iWorlds this week. Some renewed research interest here at the end. I think a lot of that's on the back of our returning champion Chris Schoenthal has decided to attend both Worlds events this year. So kudos to those trekking and double dipping on the weekend. I know that's quite the undertaking. But it's exciting to see everyone. I'm transitioning from the overwhelming nature of planning and organizing and all this to the anticipation for what hopefully is a super awesome weekend.
Nice.
I'm incredibly excited.
Oh, and we have a trophy. I'd like to prop my father-in-law, who I won't go into all the details, but he does a lot of woodworking, and there is now a wooden base and height and girth to the Iowa Worlds trophy this year. It is something to behold.
All right.
Well, now I'm super curious.
Very curious. Can't wait to see it. I have two props, okay. Will, real quick. One is I want to prop Kyle on his awesome art that he got for the playmats for Isle Worlds, which are really, really good. And then I want to prop the two of you, because the last episode that I wasn't on, you guys said such nice things about my ability to organize tournaments that it literally brought tears to my eyes while I was at the trolley, and it made me feel really good. It was a long work day, and it made me feel very good. So thank you, gentlemen. That was very nice.
Anytime, Roy. I mean, I hope you remember us next time you're talking about the health of the Midwest meta and its strongest players.
I talked about Will.
There was like a sense.
I talked about Will.
I talked about how the Missouri was in a rebuilding phase, which is what you basically told me at Gen Con.
You didn't even talk about my state. Not only me, my state. Cold-blooded.
It was very cold-blooded of me. Not at all because I was drunk and forgot like half the people I wanted to talk about.
It's okay. Glazer gave it to me, Will, and Tommy. And I was like, well, that was a little brash and short-thought.
Literally the only Midwesterners he knows.
Tommy, Will, Kyle, we're done. Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, he named the three of us because, yeah, that's all he's got.
And then he upset Luke because he didn't list Luke. It's just like you can't win. That's why I didn't want to name names. I wanted to just talk in general about metas. You just can't win in that.
I really appreciate
not winning in that.
I would prop how hard that conversation degraded into just like a drunken bitch fit and shit-talking session. And I really liked it. It was a good thing to witness, to not have to hang my name on.
It will be fun. Maybe we'll have you on next year, Kyle.
Oh, you're not ready for that. I'm not ready for that. I need a headset. Earbuds and a laptop is not going to work.
Yeah, not according to Buzz. Buzz will not allow that. He's not as forgiving as Will.
Will's our big softie. Letting me talk stupid shit on his podcast for how many years now?
4 years.
I was still in Davenport when I started, so... Ugh. Yeah, 4 years ago?
Yeah.
Dang, Will. We've been doing this a while.
Well, speaking of things that take a while, how's that for a segue? My only... No, I do have two props. My first one, the one I thought of, is to this Boulevard Dark Truth Imperial Stout that I'm drinking. What's that?
Phenomenal.
It's pretty good, and I felt that it was, you know, vaguely kind of Halloween-y themed, so it seemed like a good plan for this month. As well, I'm going to throw out a prop to the first episode of Batman Telltale Game Season 2. After Roy was talking about those fairly recently, I finally got off my duff and started in on that over the weekend. And I really enjoyed the first episode. I don't want to really throw spoilers out there for the whole thing. But as far as very early stuff goes, at least, they throw the Riddler out there in your face right off the bat, make him very interesting and intimidating just right from the get-go. This episode really hit the ground running, and I liked that. It was different pacing than Telltale often is.
Yeah, I think it was a really strong opener, and I think it had a really... I mean, we can spoil the basic thing. It had a really interesting reinterpretation of the Riddler. I think it was a really good beginning. I have mixed feelings about the second episode, so it'll be interesting to see what Will has to say about it. But I enjoyed the first episode a lot, and I look forward to the third one.
Yeah, I agree. This version of the Riddler was very interesting and very cool. I am eager to find out more. All right, that's what I've got.
I can hear my cat beginning to beckon as she gets closer.
I need to I need to take the dog out and go to bed, which is the most dangerous zone of things that a person could do at the end of an evening.
Oh, watch your pet defecate?
That's pretty dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, I got to close a chapter on the book of this
that
night.
That is a great plan. I assume that Roy grades very, very hard in his day job, so.
Oh, yes. I'm notorious for just being just the most rigorous and difficult grader in my school.
Yeah, you eviscerate people. I've heard stories this far out in the, I don't know, pick a derogatory name that Aaron has for the Midwest. But yeah, we've
Fly
heard about
country.
It out here.
That jerk.
Such a jerk. That jerk, Aaron Glazer. Scourge of the community.
Had to take an opportunity to take a dig at Aaron.
Well, like Matt Lay, he will never know that we insulted him, so
that's true.
We can just call it the white book restricted list. People who will never hear when they are insulted or spoke ill of on the white book. Aaron is definitely one of those people, along with Matt Lay and Kyle when he's not on episodes.
Exactly. Well, even when he is on the episode, I'm not convinced.
Dang. I'm like right here, guys.